Next call, the case of James Montel Chapel versus the state, case number 61967. Ready to go, Mr. Oram?
Yes, I am, Your Honor.
Okay.
Your Honor, before I start, may I reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal?
Yes, sir, of course.
May it please the Court, my name is Christopher Oram. I'm the attorney for Mr. Chapel, who is the appellant. In this case, Mr. Chapel did not receive meaningful appellate, or excuse me, post-conviction review. This case, it's a death penalty case. I briefed it, handed in a 62 or 63 page supplement. There was a request for different experts, a request for an investigator. We went to oral argument and everything was denied. There was no evidentiary hearing. There was no funding for an investigator, no funding for the experts I had requested. I would argue that there was a significant need in this capital case for an investigator, for experts. And specifically, I'll start with fetal alcohol. This court in Habistreau reversed Mr. Habistreau's sentence of death because, in part, the defense counsel did not obtain or investigate any evidence of fetal alcohol, not presenting any evidence of fetal alcohol. In this particular case, in Mr. Chapel's case, the jury found as mitigator number 5, Chapel was born to a drug-slash-alcohol-addicted mother. His IQ was 80. There was no evidence in this voluminous file that anyone had done any investigation whatsoever with regard to fetal alcohol. So it seemed, based upon those factors, that it would be incumbent upon post-conviction counsel, myself, to request funding for an expert to do a full neurological examination and also to have an expert on fetal alcohol. Lately, in the last few years, I would argue that fetal alcohol evidence in penalty phases has been successful in saving the lives of a couple individuals that I'm aware of. So to come to the district court and request the funding and have absolutely that denied summarily seems as though he did not have any type of meaningful post-conviction.
Now, I'm a little confused on one thing. I know the court disallowed the PET scan, and that was related, from what I understand, to your desire to have the fetal alcohol syndrome presented and what type of cognitive disabilities resulted from that. But I thought you had an expert that did indicate the nature of his low IQ and his cognitive deficits.
That was Dr. Edcoff, and that's true, Your Honor. Justice Perry-Gurry, 10 years before the last penalty phase, Dr. Edcoff examined the defendant. But as the court said in Caro, there was a Ninth Circuit case that I cited, he's not qualified to conduct a fetal alcohol examination. He's just not qualified, and he didn't do brain imaging. And brain imaging and fetal alcohol seem to dovetail with one another. It seems to me that if you're going to put forth fetal alcohol, that the doctors now request that brain imaging be done, and the brain can actually show evidence of the damage done as a result of the mother early in pregnancy, throughout the pregnancy, drinking or ingesting drugs. And so it was not done, and I didn't have the funding for it.
But did the prosecution actually go into detail in challenging Dr. Ektoff's ability to make those determinations? And in fact, at least one juror, probably more, found it as a mitigating factor.
That's true.
Based on, apparently, Dr. Ektoff's testimony.
Justice Perry, That's true. However, if that was the standard, then what would be the point of having fetal alcohol experts and conducting brain imaging? There would be no need. You could just have a basic psychologist say, I have done some investigation, and apparently the mother drank alcohol, he has a low IQ, therefore, this is what I find.
Your argument would be very relevant if the prosecution came in and challenged and attacked that doctor's determination.
But the doctor...
Based upon the fact he wasn't qualified to make that type of determination. But did that happen here?
It wasn't that they attacked it because the doctor didn't say he suffered from fetal alcohol syndrome, nor did the jury find that. The jury did find that Mr. Chappell was born to a drug-slash-alcohol-addicted mother. That's it. That doesn't mean that he is suffering from fetal alcohol. And my understanding of this brain imaging is that it has to do with gray matter and has to do with the development of the human brain. And I think it is significantly more compelling in a capital case to show brain imaging and have somebody come in, an expert come in, and explain what that means. And if we're in 1996, when this event occurred, when this murder occurred, that may be a standard. But now, 20 years on, I would think that we have developed to the point where technologically we should be presenting this type of information to the jury. And it comes back to one important factor here, and that is, what is the purpose of post-conviction relief if a capital litigator is not going to be given any funding? It seemed to me throughout
the... We do have a purpose. There's a case called Miranda that cost the county $5 million because of that same thing.
Justice Cherry, that's true, but none of my cases cost $5 million. No,
it cost the county $5 million because they did not give sufficient experts or investigative money to the council because it was one of my associates that was handling it in the district court, and then went to federal court where money was given, I think over $100,000 for investigation.
I see your point. In a civil litigation?
Yes.
Okay, I understand your point. I believe it should be done out of the abundance of caution. The man was sentenced to death.
Well, we don't have any standards. It's the luck of the draw. There's 32 district court judges, maybe 25 of them handle criminal cases. So it's a luck of the draw as to whether you get an evidentiary hearing. What about no evidentiary hearing in this capital case?
No evidentiary hearing. No evidentiary hearing, no investigator.
I mean, I appreciate your arguments and everything, but I sure do like evidence presented under oath with direct examination, cross-examination, redirect and recross. We don't have that here.
Well, there's something else that's important. I recognize it's an unpublished opinion by this court. I overturned a man named Kittrick Powell's death penalty case in front of Judge McGrory 10, 12, 15 years ago. And when the state appealed, and I had put in affidavits, and there was no evidentiary hearing, this court reversed, remanded, and said you don't overturn a capital decision or a capital verdict without an evidentiary hearing. I am mindful that that is this court's opinion. And so I come before this court, and I don't know how I can argue that Mr. Chappell's sentence of death should be reversed, because I haven't got any evidence to present to you. There was no evidence. I just have opinions and arguments. That's what I have. I would have liked to have called trial counsel and questioned him and questioned the second penalty phase counsel over decisions that were made here. Why were these experts not obtained? For example, and I know this one is a little more sensitive, however, it seemed that the state was able to cross-examine the defense experts in the second penalty phase with the statement that Mr. Chappell must be lying, because Mr. Chappell said he had consensual sex with his wife before the murder, then he'd become enraged when he found out she was not faithful to him, in his opinion. And one of the things he said is, there was no ejaculation. Each one of the defense experts was questioned, if there was semen found, then he must be lying. And Dr. Edcoff said, yeah, now that I hear that, I didn't know about the DNA. That's a bogus decision. That was a bogus story. That was his word, bogus. And the other doctor said, yes, that is conclusive proof that he must have ejaculated and therefore telling the jury he's lying. And it seems to me that was so easy to counteract. Just get an expert to come in. I cited one, even though I didn't have funding. I just went and got some, did some research. And that obviously, there can be semen present without ejaculation. Therefore, the defendant doesn't have to be lying at all. And this seems like the type of information that I should have been permitted to examine counsel over at an evidentiary hearing. But I, in the end, just saw this as just completely meaningless, a completely meaningless capital post-conviction proceeding. I file all these documents. I come before the court. I think, well, maybe I'll get an expert. Maybe I'll get an investigator. Maybe I'll get an evidentiary hearing. And after short oral argument, I'm told, you'll get nothing. Go away.
Any money, you're not going to have an evidentiary hearing anyway, because who's going to come free?
No one's coming free. At least, though, Justice Cherry, if I'd been given the evidentiary hearing, what I would have done is at least I would have called trial counsel, and I would have thought that would have given me more time to demonstrate to the district court judge there's problems here, and could, I realize my time's done, if I could just finish this. If I would have been able to show the district court judge there are difficulties with this case, could you please, now that you've heard the evidentiary hearing, grant some funding for experts, which in the past, once I've had evidentiary hearings, I found district court judges sometimes are willing to ask for a more supplemental briefing or provide some funding in the form of an expert or an investigator. With that, I'll wait, reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Mr. Owens?
May it please the court, I'm Steve Owens of the Clark County District Attorney's Office on behalf of respondents. We have a legal standard for when one is entitled to an evidentiary hearing, and that is when they have articulated specific facts not belied by the record, which if true would entitle them to relief. Too often we have district court judges holding evidentiary hearings and they're unable to articulate the reason for the hearing, the purpose, what is the factual dispute. They're holding them because they don't want to be reversed. They have the impression that it's just routine, it's automatic, we have to do evidentiary hearings. This particular petition did not need an evidentiary hearing for a variety of reasons. Several of these issues, we already have the record that we need, such as the failure to call James Ford and Ivory Merrill, two witnesses for whom the first penalty hearing was reversed. Counsel went on the record during the penalty hearing and explained why those witnesses weren't going to be called. They offered a mitigation investigator who summarized the testimony. They explained they didn't need live testimony from those witnesses. So there's no need for us to conduct an evidentiary hearing. The facts are already there in the record. There's other claims in here where we embrace and accept their allegations as being true, such as fetal alcohol syndrome. That's how the judge disposed of this without having an evidentiary hearing. We accepted that allegation that the defendant does have fetal alcohol syndrome, and the judge said that doesn't show deficient performance by third penalty or second penalty phase counsel, and it doesn't show any prejudice because penalty phase counsel did have two psychologists. They had Dr. Etkoff, who's actually a neuropsychologist, and they had testimony from Dr. Stanton, a psychologist, and they had another expert, a medical expert, Dr. Gray from Utah. So they had three experts already. The jury heard testimony about borderline personality disorder, low IQ, the defendant had been in special ed classes growing up. He had mental deficiencies. The jury found that aggravating circumstance that he was born to a drug and alcohol addicted mother. So what was to be gained by having what appears to me to be a label, fetal alcohol syndrome? If we just had an expert to label that, that would have made a difference in the case.
I think from what I understand, discussing the PET scan issue with him, a PET scan would show a very organic, objective aspect to this.
Is that the new standard for capital defendants now? Everyone's entitled to a PET scan because they all have mental deficiencies in my experience, every last one of them. Certainly Mr. Oren has come up with that PET scan, and there's undoubtedly countless other medical tests that could be performed on these capital litigants. Dr. Etkoff, Dr. Danton, neither of the two psychologists that they did have, neither one of them has said, I need a PET scan to better assess this defendant's mental status. It's simply a fishing expedition. The purpose for an evidentiary hearing or to hire experts is not to go fishing to see if there's something else out there. It's got to be related to some particular claim. Third penalty hearing counsel had these two psychologists. There's nothing else in the record that would have alerted them to say, hey, in addition to this, even though my own experts don't say I need a PET scan, I should have gone and gotten a PET scan. I don't think that's the standard, that we just come up with something new that prior counsel didn't do. That's not the role of habeas. Habeas is to review what counsel did do, find out where they were deficient, and see if there is any prejudice by their failures. And we don't have that with some PET scan that Mr. Oram has come up with. No expert has said that's necessary.
How do you find deficiency if you don't put the lawyers on the stand under oath?
What's that?
How do you find a deficiency if you don't put lawyers on the stand under oath? I don't understand that.
Well, then you have to say that every capital defendant is entitled to a PET scan, because counsel, just to cover the bases, has to have, I think we're to the point where you have to have a psychologist now. I think they all have to have a psychologist, even if, you know, the person's not indicating that they have some sort of mental health issues. I think we're unfortunately to that point, but even without any evidence of that, it's almost routine. You have to have a psychologist. I don't hope we're not to the point where it's routine that you just have to have a PET scan or you're deficient.
Well, the psychologist thing has changed. The law has changed over the years. Like when Seaton and Mel Harmon tried this case, there wasn't a talk about mental retardation. And then the law changed to where if you had 70 or below, you were considered defective, and that could prevent you from getting the death penalty. Now it's, well, maybe that number isn't correct. We've got to look at all the facts and circumstances. But the only way you can look at that in this day and age, in 2015, is with an evidentiary hearing. I don't know how you could do it otherwise, just by guessing. I mean, he said he had an 80. I think he said he had an 80, or Mr. Rome said he had an 80 IQ. That's pretty low.
It is. And the jury heard that. They heard that he had intellectual disability. Even during the juvenile years, he was in special ed. They heard all that. What more is a PET scan going to show? It's going to show his brain isn't working right. The jury heard that. Why would counsel need to go to the added expense and time of doing a PET scan when their own experts didn't suggest it? Mr. Oram has suggested it, you know, some 10, 15 years after the fact. And when we're back here on another petition 10, 15 years later, there will be another medical test that we could do. There's, just like there's countless experts that could be retained, there's countless medical tests that could be ordered. I don't think we need an evidentiary hearing to say that the record doesn't give any indication here of any deficiency of counsel to use a neuropsychologist to update that during the second penalty hearing with another psychologist and go with the record that they had. And they got that finding from the jury that the mother was drug and alcohol at the time, addicted when she gave birth. So I don't see how there's any prejudice. I don't see how there's any deficient performance. I don't think we need an evidentiary hearing to determine those things.
Was there any ruling that would have, ruling on the PET scan issue by the court that would have prevented counsel from asking these experts, each one of them, whether or not a PET scan would be necessary to their determination if there was truly any type of organic?
I just heard Mr. Orm say he wished that he could have, if I heard him right, wished he could have talked to David Sheik, who was the penalty hearing counsel. He could have picked up the phone and done that at any time and asked him any questions. He also could have picked up the phone and called his two prior experts to go over their prior testimony with them and field some of these questions with them. And if he came in and said, hey, Dr. Etkoff, you know, says in light of today's technology, he could really benefit from a PET scan, then we would have something. But they didn't do that. The U.S. Supreme Court says that a defendant's general statements claiming the necessity of an expert witness are insufficient to warrant the appointment of an expert. We don't just appoint them like it's a checkoff list, like a capital litigation. We have to have an evidentiary hearing. We have to have minimum three experts. You know, it's got to be related to the facts of the case. They have to show some sort of necessity here. And if you can resolve a petition without an evidentiary hearing, you should. And we were able to do that here by accepting those allegations as true. Real quickly on the sexual assault expert, Mr. Oram says that that their own expert got turned around. Dr. Etkoff and Dr. Danton said that's conclusive proof that the defendant gave a bogus story because his sperm was inside of the victim. You got to distinguish between sperm and semen. Even if the presence of sperm is found in pre-ejaculate fluid, and even if it's found in sufficient quantities to account for the DNA test that we did, does not in any way, shape, or form account for the semen test that we did. His semen, not just his sperm, not just his DNA, but his semen was inside of her. That conclusively disproves that the defendant did not ejaculate inside of her like he said. That's kind of a tangential issue. It's really only related to the sexual assault, not that ejaculation is necessary for it, but the fact that he lied about that. And that was the medical examiner from Utah, a medical doctor who said, yeah, that presence of semen there conclusively establishes he did ejaculate. So we don't need another expert to come in to talk about that. We've had countless experts, We had three experts at this penalty hearing, all talking about whether or not this sexual assault was consensual or not. So, yeah, his request for an evidentiary hearing and experts was denied because the purpose of those is not to conduct discovery, to see what issues are out there, to go fishing for some issue. Some of his motions literally were one sentence. In light of the seriousness of Mr. Chappell's conviction and sentence and death, I believe it is necessary that an investigator be available. That was it. Never mind that Mr. Sheik had at least two investigators that we know of just from the record before us. One of them testified at the third penalty hearing. Another one was instrumental in locating witnesses that were the result of the reversal of the first penalty hearing. So we know that counsel previously had an investigator. Give me something more about what you plan to do with an investigator. What was not done by previous counsel that should have been done that you need an investigator to go forth and do? I don't think we should just be spending taxpayer money on PET scans, bringing people off a death row into some medical office somewhere and conducting some medical tests that I probably couldn't even have available to me if I wanted one. The judge did not err in denying this petition. We didn't need the evidentiary hearing. His allegations are belied by the record. Even if true, it would not have entitled him to relief. I think I've covered everything that Mr. Orem has raised here. Unless the court has any further questions for me, that will conclude my argument. Thank you for your time.
All right, Mr. Owens, thank you. Mr. Orem?
Mr. Orem, I think you need to be real specific. Mr. Owens raised some very interesting issues about evidentiary hearing. What would you have done if you had the evidentiary hearing and the money? What would you have done? Specifically tell this group of jurists what you would have done at an evidentiary hearing, who would have been called, what would they have testified to?
Yes, I'll do that.
Or do you try to have them testify to?
First of all, let me comment on something that was said. When I filed those motions requesting experts, investigator, I did so simultaneously with a 64-page brief that should have, when read in context, made it very obvious what I wanted to investigate and why I needed the experts. Second of all, if the court was going to talk about conversations I had with Mr. Sheik, I most certainly will do so. However, there's nothing in the record, and it would be, in my opinion, completely outside of the record. I'm not allowed to do that. I didn't think I was. I talked to David Sheik about the case. I just can't talk about what we talked about. You have to give me the evidentiary hearing. What would I have done? I would have, first of all, if I was given the funding for an expert, even if I was on a short rein, if the court said it would give you $1,000 for an investigator, we'll let you have an expert for $2,500, and I would have had that done, had it conducted. I would have had the investigator go to Arizona. That is a portion of the place this couple lived where Ms. Panos was a 911 operator and had domestic violence, where I would have liked to have had some investigation done to see what kind of a relationship they had. That was something that I requested. I would have had this the scientific information done, PET scan done, brain imaging done. If the brain imaging had an objective finding of damage, then I would have presented it. I would have called the person who conducted the brain imaging, and I would have said, tell the court what does this mean? Tell the court what it means. I would have put Mr. Sheik on the stand and put Mr. Patrick on the stand, his co-counsel, and asked the following question. This is a question from the prosecutor during the penalty phase. The prosecutor was so concerned during the penalty phase about the lack of mitigation being presented, lack of mitigation witnesses. The prosecutor stated, this is on page 8 of my reply brief, I went back and reviewed the court's order, which was the basis for the reversal of the penalty phase, and the reason why we were in the proceedings, the decision by Judge Douglas, I believe confirmed by the Supreme Court in the order of affirmance, that the defense failed to call certain witnesses that would have made a difference in the outcome of the original case. He's concerned because the original witnesses that overturned the case, the reason The case was overturned. Several witnesses were not called. The prosecutor continues, there were 8 or 9 witnesses that were detailed in the briefs and the decision. For the record, my notation on that would indicate that he names 9 names. Of those 9 names, the defendant only called 2 of them, by my understanding. There were 5 of them that were not called. No affidavits were submitted. No letters were written in. No testimony was given in summary by third parties. I would have questioned penalty phase counsel as to why did that happen. Why is the prosecutor putting that on the record? That's what I would have done. And that, to me, seems pretty concise as to what I would have done. And if I had been given that opportunity, then the district court, I think, can make an informed decision. Did he receive effective assistance of counsel? Without giving me that opportunity, then how was this anything other than meaningless post-conviction? How was it anything other than meaningless post-conviction? You have to give us the opportunity to at least present to a district court judge a showing that the man received ineffective assistance of counsel. Otherwise, it's just a waste of time. I think, Justice Perry-Gary, you asked some interesting questions when you say organic brain damage. I'm just not skilled enough to know how to explain it. But I've tried reading the articles on fetal alcohol in the brain imaging. I just can't articulate it. Obviously, it's not my profession, but people can. And I would suggest that that would have been very, very helpful in this particular case.
I probably should have been a little more precise and simple in the way I phrased it. I'm talking about demonstrable evidence that a PET scan would show that there was some type of an injury that would support your position other than just testimony.
And you know what I think is interesting? Let me argue the inverse as though I'm the prosecutor, and maybe it would show nothing. But I wasn't given an opportunity to even be quiet on it. If I could just say one last thing. I was once given an opportunity on a case by Judge Leavitt to have a fingerprint expert because there was a dispute as to whether it was my client's fingerprint. After I was given funding, I never mentioned it again, and I remember the district court seemed very amused by the fact that I didn't mention it again in the post-conviction. The reason was it hurt me. But at least give us the opportunity, the funding, to at least try to show ineffective assistance of counsel. With that, if there are no more questions, I'll submit.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Orr. Mr. Owens, thank you for your arguments here today. And this case will stand submitted.